please come to order on the 52nd legislative day. Will the members please vote to signify their presence?
The roll shows 17 members present this morning. Senators Krutula and Zemanski are excused from the call of the Senate.
Did you say 18 members?
I'm sorry.
18.
Please stand for the invocation by the chaplain, Pastor Mike Rose, Bethel Christian Church.
Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you that this is the day that the Lord hath made, and we will rejoice and be glad in it. Lord, we pray for your continued guidance and wisdom, Lord, for our representatives. And Lord, we pray for each one of us that we would be bold to do that which is right. We pray, Lord, that justice and righteousness will, Lord, be held high in our land continually. And we thank you for this time that we have together. We thank you for your presence here. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, Senator Adams, please lead us in the pledge this morning.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Jones?
I move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread upon the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread upon the journal. Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I wish to certify as the correctness of the journal for the 51st legislative day.
Senator Hofford.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal be approved and certified by the Senate secretary.
Without objection, the journal is approved and certified. Introduction of guests. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, the gallery behind me is a longtime friend, a constituent of Senator Halpert and Senator Kelly, Ruth Callan.
Senator Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. President. Also in the gallery behind me is an individual who's in town to conduct training workshops for teachers, lawyers, and law enforcement personnel in law-related education for the classroom, and 150 teachers, I understand, will be participating. It's a program sponsored by the Department of Education and the Alaska Bar Association. That individual is Dr. Mabel McKinney Browning, Staff Director of the Special Committee on Youth Education for Citizenship of the American Bar Association.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, it gives me great pleasure today to introduce to the Senate my oldest son, John, and his wife, Luann, who are here from Fairbanks, and they're with Ed Rohr from the Christian schools, and with them they have some students, Andy Decker, Reuben Leek, Brandy Barstow, Galena Voigt, Kathleen Foster, and Matt Voigt. Welcome to the Senate, folks.
Further introductions? Messages from the governor.
There are no messages from the governor this morning.
Messages from the House.
There are no messages from the House.
Communications.
The following reports have been received from John Lucas, Director, Office of Management and Budget, on four construction bond funds. Letter report, 1974 Fire Protection Facilities Fund at December 31, 1988. Report on the 1976 School Construction Fund at June 30, 1988. Report on the 1976 Parks Construction Fund at June 30, 1988, and report on the 1978 Recreational Facilities Construction Fund at December 31, 1988. These reports are in file in the Office of the Secretary of the Senate. Those are the communications this morning.
Reports of standing committees.
Finance Committee considered Senate Joint Resolution Number 28, Oil and Gas Exploration, Development, and Production within the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and recommended do pass. The report was signed by Senators Ewing and Binkley, co-chairs, concurring Senators Jara, Frank, Pierce, Fisher, and Duncan. There is a previous zero fiscal note attached. There is no further referral to Senate Joint Resolution Number 28.
Rules Committee.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 75, State Publications, and recommended it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 75, Finance, and do pass. The report was signed by Senators Ewing and Binkley, co-chairs, concurring Senators Duncan, Frank, Pierce, Fisher, and Jaroff. There is a zero fiscal note attached. Senate Bill Number 75 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 85, Issuance of Private Activity Bonds, effective date, and a majority of the committee recommended to pass. The report was signed by Senator Ewing, co-chair, concurring Senators Duncan, Jaroff, Fisher, and Pierce. There's a previous zero fiscal note attached. There is no further referral on Senate Bill number 85.
Rules Committee.
The Judiciary Committee considered Senate Bill number 94, limiting liability for certain activities of the Alaska National Guard, and recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for Senate Bill number 94, Judiciary, with a new title, and reports it back as follows. Senator Fakes, Chair, and Senator Helford signed do pass. Senators Szymanski, Pierce, and Rohde signed no recommendation. There is a fiscal note attached. Senate Bill number 94 has no further referral.
It did pick up a negative fiscal note. I will assign it to the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 153, making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Revenue for reimbursement to municipalities under the Fisheries Tax Refund Program and the Aviation Fuel Revenue Sharing effective date. Majority of the committee recommended it do pass. The report was signed by Senator Ewing, Chair, Co-Chair, concurring Senators Jaroff, Duncan, Frank, Pierce, and Fisher. Senate Bill number 153 has no further referral.
Rules Committee.
The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill number 138, training of foster parents, and recommends calendar. The report was signed by Senator Sturgalewski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Kurtula, and Eliason. Senate Bill 138 is on today's calendar. The Rules Committee considered Senate Bill number 66, immunity for treatment of intoxicated persons effective date, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66 with a new title and calendar and do pass. The report was signed by Senator Sturgalewski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Eliason, and Kelly. Senate Bill number 66 is on today's calendar. The Rules Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill number 69, State Affairs, and recommends calendar. The report was signed by Senator Sturgalewski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Eliason, and Kelly. This bill is also on today's calendar. Those are the standing committee reports this morning, Mr. President.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
Senate Joint Resolution number 34. By Senators Adams, Jaroff, Binkley, Sturgalewski, Szymanski, and Kelly, relating to community action agencies.
Committee on Regional Affairs.
That is the only resolution for introduction this morning.
Introduction of Senate bills.
Senate Bill number 199 by Senator Eliason, entitled An Act Relating to Filling Legislative Vacancies.
State Affairs.
Senate Bill number 200. By Senators Halford, Ewing, Fakes, Coghill, Eliason, Binkley, Adams, and Pierce, entitled An Act Amending the Interest Rate on Mortgage Loans Purchased by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation under its Special Mortgage Loan Purchase Program and Providing for an Effective Date.
Special Committee on Banking and Economic Development Finance.
Those are the bills for introduction this morning.
Consideration of the daily calendar. Would the Secretary please? Senator Fakes.
Brief at ease, please.
The Senate will stand at ease. Senate, please come back to order. Senator Rohde.
May we revert to introduction of guests?
Without objection, revert to introduction of guests.
Mr. President, in the far gallery is a longtime friend of mine, the executive director of the Permanent Fund, and lately a spokesman for disabled persons, Dave Rose.
We're down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the Secretary please read the first item of business?
Senate Bill number 138 by Senator Fisher, and the Act relating to the training of foster parents. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered the bill. Majority of the committee recommends to pass. The report was signed by Senator Fisher, Chair, concurring. Senators Jones, Kelly, and Duncan, zero fiscal note. Finance Committee considered the bill, and majority of the committee recommends to pass. The report was signed by Senator Binkley, co-chair, concurring. Senators Duncan, Frank, and Fisher. Senator Ewing, co-chair, signed no rep. Senator Pierce signed needs amendment, previous year fiscal note. Rules Committee considered the bill and recommends calendaring. Report was signed by Senator Sturgalewski, Chair, concurring. Senators Elias and Kurtula and Rohde.
Are there any amendments?
Amendment number one by Senator Pierce, page 1, line 24, has been distributed.
Senator Pierce.
Yes, Mr. President. Would move amendment number one and ask unanimous consent.
Objections? No objections. Amendment number one is adopted. Are there any further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Senator Halford.
I move and ask unanimous
consent, Senate Bill 138 amended be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and place in final passage.
Without objection, Senate Bill 138 as amended is in third reading.
Senate Bill number 138 amended, an act relating to the training of foster parents.
Senator Fakes.
Thank you. Mr. President, I have a question for the prime sponsor. Is there training going on of foster parents right now, and if so, under what circumstances, and how is it working?
Senator Fahrenkamp.
May we have a brief at ease?
Senate will stand at ease. Question was asked. Senator Fisher.
Yes, through the chair, there is some training going on now through the department, so there will still be training, but the people who are the foster parents, what they want is a curriculum that's geared to their needs and not so much geared to what some bureaucrats said they think they should have. One of the problems that they want to address is burnout, for example, and they feel they want to be trained ahead of time, or a prospective foster parent should be trained ahead of time to at least know what to expect down the road, and that's not really being done now. Another thing that came out in finance, which was kind of interesting, it can actually save the state money because them as a nonprofit, they can have the same consultants that the state hires at a lesser price. And I was really surprised to see that. But they gave a specific instance where it cost the state half if they did it through their nonprofit status and through a federal project. So, yeah, there is some training going on. The foster parents would like to see it revised. The department did not say no. I mean, the department feels there needs to be training. There was a problem with what about an emergency situation, which we just took care of that through the amendment, which will allow somebody to be a foster parent without this training if there are no foster parents available. So it would be an emergency situation. But this came from the foster parents themselves. They want to undergo orientation and training better than what they're getting now.
Senator Fakes.
So they want to expand the training? And is there being training done in rural Alaska? I see my colleague to the right of me here is back, but he was concerned about, is there training going on in rural Alaska at this point in time? And so then is this training being expanded to what is going on right now?
Senator Fisher.
Yes, through the chair, to the senator in Anchorage, your colleague on the right could better answer that question than myself.
Any further discussion? Senator Fakes.
Well, and I'm confused. Well, I see I'm not getting direct answers here, and I'm confused, and maybe we need to have an at ease, and I can talk to the senator on the Kena myself. But there's a zero fiscal note with this bill, and yet it's adding a requirement to the department that appears to, at the minimum, to be an expansion of what's going on now. And we all know the DHSS is always complaining about a shortage of money. They always have the biggest supplementals turned in. They have the biggest supplementals turned in this time. And how are they going to do this? I guess I'm just concerned about the zero fiscal note. Is it real? And if there is an expansion of training, where are they going to get the money to do this? Who's setting up the curriculum? Why isn't there contract fees? My real question is on the fiscal note.
Senator will stand at ease. Please come back to order, Senator Halford.
I'm going to ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 138 be held in second reading for tomorrow's calendar.
Without objection, Senate Bill 138 will be held. Would the Secretary please read the next item of business?
Six by Senators Halford, Kelly, Fakes, and Jones, an act relating to immunity for treatment of intoxicated persons and providing for an effective date. This bill was read a second time and returned to the Rules Committee on February 24th. The Rules Committee considered the bill again and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66 rules, new title, calendar, and due pass. The report was signed by Senator Strzelewski, Chair, concurring Senators Kelly, Eliason, and Rohde. There's a Jude CS and a Rule CS.
Senator Strzelewski, Rules Committee substitute.
Move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the Rules Committee substitute.
Without objection, the Rules Committee substitute is adopted. Senator Fahrenkamp.
I'd like to call the House.
Senate has been called. Body, please stand at ease. Back to order. Senator Fahrenkamp.
Mr. President, I will remove that call until the motion's on the floor.
Madam Secretary.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66 rules by the Rules Committee, an act relating to immunity for treatment of intoxicated and incapacitated persons and providing for an effective date.
Are there any amendments?
Amendment number 1 by Senator Rohde, page 1, line 15, and this amendment has been distributed.
Senator Rohde.
I move amendment number 1.
There is an objection. Senator Rohde?
The amendment adds gross negligence to the concept of intentional conduct that's there. Presently, there is responsibility by the municipalities for the treatment of incapacitated persons. This bill was originally put forth to absolutely eliminate any liability the municipality might have. That was perceived to be too much by the Judiciary Committee. Intentional conduct, or rather intentional misconduct, was added into the bill in the Judiciary Committee. That standard, in my opinion, is too high. Gross conduct or reckless conduct is, I still think, a inacceptable standard for a municipality to exercise, and that's the reason that I've offered the amendment. It would exempt simple negligence from the purview of the Act, but would still retain either gross negligence or intentional misconduct as a reason for liability by the municipality.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I would call the Senate on the amendment, but in continuing the debate on the issue, the Municipal League and the Anchorage Crime Commission considered the standards, and the original bill reflected those standards that they'd recommended. We did, in fact, add intentional misconduct. We did not go as far as to add gross negligence. It was considered in the Judiciary Committee. I do not support the amendment.
There is a call on the Senate. The Senate will stand at ease. Sergeant of Arms, is the call satisfied?
Yes.
We have an amendment in front of the body. Call has been satisfied. There's an amendment in front of the body. He's excused today. Any further discussion? Senator Duncan.
Can we have it at ease, please?
Senate will stand at ease. The thing is that Senator Szymanski and Zaroff will be here today until 5:40 and are subject to a call of the body. There is an amendment before the body. Did anybody want to speak to that amendment and remind us what we're talking about? Senator Szymanski.
Thank you. First of all, I want to apologize to the body for not being on for a few moments ago when the call was placed, but I was looking for my my backup file on the bill, which is misplaced somewhere. I do want to address the amendment because I think it's an appropriate amendment, an amendment that certainly deserves, I think, considerable thought with regard to what the policy implications are associated with it. And I wish I had the statute here, but basically the statute that we're dealing with here requires local governments to take individuals who are incapacitated and put them into protective custody or put them into custody. And let's think about that for a moment and think about whether or not the intent behind gross negligence in this case can or should be exempted from those individuals who have that responsibility. The population that we're dealing with here is not, I would hope not, the average person sitting on this floor, but it's indeed probably a population that, through the wisdom and the guidance of the legislature, they determined were people that needed special care, needed special consideration. Many of them are visitors to large municipalities like the city of Anchorage. They're people who are not used to alcohol. They're people who have become intoxicated for whatever reason and incapacitated. They may be homeless. They may have been evicted and under severe depression. They can have a lot of problems. And again, I'm not saying that it's anybody that in this room, but you have to relate back to some of the constituency that we represent, particularly from rural Alaska, people that come in and find a strange location like Anchorage. And for some reason, you want to relate to the situation. And we put on a law in the books that says, municipalities, you're required to pick up and take in protective custody people who are incapacitated, not able to take care of themselves. The Busby decision, which prompted the legislation before you, was an individual just in that situation. And I don't think anybody disputes the facts of the case that the individual was improperly dealt with and that there was negligence on part of the police officer that was dealing with it.
There's no, it's almost undisputed. I mean, it's undisputed from all the facts that we presented in the Judiciary Committee, which I sit on, court history, pleadings, the arguments that were made. The only argument now is whether or not anybody should be responsible for it. Well, let's just assume that we know somebody in that same similar situation, and it could be a child, it could be a relative of yours, and while you're not directly impacted today, you could be impacted tomorrow, because a law enforcement officer who has gone through proper training, extensive training, which was testified to committee, that they have the ability and the competence to make that judgment call as to what is incapacitated, what is simple drunkenness. And there's no question about it. It's not like that there's some vague area there. When you're incapacitated. You're incapable of dealing on your own in public, and the local government has a responsibility to take them into custody. If we pass this bill, what we're saying is you still have that responsibility, but if you've gone through and you're a 15-year professional working for a local government, or 20 years, and you've had numerous cases, and let's say you get up on the bad side of the day and you decide it's too cold to get out of that car, it's too cold, you don't feel good about it, you don't particularly like the type of people that you're picking up. And let's say for some reason you do have a bigoted or a prejudiced streak in your bone and you just don't like those people. And you make that judgment call. And that person dies in the street. That person that made that judgment call isn't going to think twice about it. But the family will associate with it. I certainly will, because we will have a repeat of the same situation we had in the past. But if we pass this bill unamended, the gross negligence that took place will not hold anybody accountable. Is that really what we want to do? Do we want to take away that responsibility? I'm not prepared to do that, because I think that like any law that we pass, we think it through, hopefully it's good policy, and if it's bad policy, repeal the law. But just don't tell somebody you have the responsibility to carry out the law, but don't hold them accountable. That's really poor policy, and that's exactly what we do if we neglect to adopt this amendment.
Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think what you have to realize is that the underlying statute creates a duty which it doesn't fund, and it creates a very nebulous duty. The statute reads, a person who appears to be incapacitated by alcohol in a public place shall be taken into protective custody. This amendment deals specifically with the decision whether or not to take the person into protective custody. Now, last year, when the governor introduced a bill on exactly this text, what he essentially introduced was an absolute bar as a discretionary function. It stated the decision is a discretionary function and no cause of action may be brought based on that decision. This year, the governor's offered other language. The municipalities offered the original bill. We have added to the original bill the language with regard to intentional misconduct. I think we have compromised this issue significantly, but I think it's important to know that we created the duty on the municipalities, and we didn't fund it. If we expect the municipalities to do something, we should fund it. We don't pass statutes that tell the municipalities that they have to charge given crimes under local ordinance, and they can, if they can't fund it, allow it to be charged under state ordinance. If the state creates the duty, the state should have accepted the liability. We didn't do that in this case. We created the duty, we created the liability, and then we passed it on with no rejoinder to municipalities. This limits that to cases of intentional misconduct. And that is exactly the position the municipalities, the Municipal League, and the Anchorage Crime Commission came down with in the original bill.
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, municipalities have always had liability for their actions. The case in point here is whether we will allow only intentional misconduct. Intentional misconduct, intentional wrongs. I'm suggesting that gross or reckless conduct be the standard, and I still think that's high. There are people that would argue with me and say that I'm wrong, that I'm placing the standard too high. I'm willing to concede that perhaps simple negligence would bring about a problem. But gross negligence or reckless misconduct, that's a very high standard, Mr. President, and I'm asking this body to at least have that level of conduct there. I think it's the least we can do for the people we represented, and I think as Senator Szymanski said, we're acting for people here who really have no voice, who have no special interest lobbies to sit in the gallery and to go to committee meetings on their behalf. On behalf of many Alaskans, and I think it's the right and the proper thing to do. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Jones.
Mr. President, I'd like to ask a question of the senator from Spinard. Being an attorney, I would suppose he would be able to explain to me the difference between gross negligence and negligence. I suspect there's a fine line there, but what are we talking about, the difference here?
Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, negligence or simple negligence would be an error in conduct. You could contrast that with gross negligence, which would be a reckless error in conduct. You can give examples which help illustrate that, but you're talking essentially about conduct which may simply be not paying attention to what whoever the person is charged with a duty is doing. Or someone who just absolutely, does the wrong thing. The difference between, slightly careless conduct and very careless or irresponsible conduct. There is no keen dividing line, but there are two ends of the continuum.
Senator Jones,
Mr. President, with that explanation, I believe that we're going to open up the barn door again, I guess you'd say, and really render this legislation ineffective. I think that the compromise to go to include intentional misconduct is just about as far as we can go and still have an effective piece of legislation.
Further discussion?
Question.
Question before the body is, shall Amendment Number 1 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Has any failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote, and so Amendment Number 1 fails with a vote of 7 yeas and 12 nays. Are there any further amendments?
I have no further amendments.
Senator Halford.
I ask unanimous consent that the Rules Committee substitute for Senate Bill 66 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, place for final passage.
Without objection, the Rules Committee substitute for Senate Bill 66 is in third reading. Madam Secretary.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66, Rules, an Act granting immunity for treatment of intoxicated and incapacitated persons and providing for effective date.
Any discussion? Question. Senator Halford.
Just for the record, and not necessarily in discussion, but because it has been stated that the facts are not disputed in the Busby case, I would just say that I believe the facts are disputed in the Busby case, and I wouldn't want statements on this floor uncorrected to be used in a lawsuit that's still ongoing.
Senator Szymanski.
Well, I guess I've been baited, and let me say to the previous speaker that obviously if he knows of a continuation of the Supreme Court decision that apparently has been rendered, I'm not aware of that, but the Supreme Court has taken it under consideration. And to the best of my knowledge, it's not still in litigation before the Supreme Court, unless there's an appeal to the beyond the Supreme Court that I'm not aware of.
Further discussion. Senator Rohde.
Mr. President, I did read that Supreme Court decision, and I practiced in front of the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said there was no material disagreement as to what the facts were in the Busby case, and there aren't. I don't think that's a correct statement of the facts.
Senator Halford.
The case was returned for trial at a lower court. If the facts are all decided, what's the trial on?
Senator Stanides. Senator Halford.
Mr. President, reading from the footnotes to the Busby case from the Supreme Court, our decision today is expressly limited to a discussion of duty. Because the trial court's judgment was not based solely upon this issue, we do not, or we need not, and do not consider any question regarding alleged breach and express no opinion as to the factual merits of Busby's claim.
Further discussion. Question before the body is, shall the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66 rules pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Secretary will record the vote. So committee substitute for Senate Bill number 66 rules passes the Senate by a vote of 14 yeas and 5 nays. Senator Halford.
I move and ask unanimous consent to roll call and final passage of committee substitute for Senate Bill 66 rules be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Madam Secretary.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 69, State Affairs, by the State Affairs Committee, an act relating to investments for Alaska Permit Plan providing for an effective date. Finance Committee waived referral. Rules Committee recommends calendaring. The report was signed by Senator Strzelewski, Chair, concurring Senators Rohde, Elias, and Kelly. Senate Bill number 27 is similar to House Bill 69 and it passed out of State Affairs and Finance with a due pass.
Are there any amendments?
I have no amendments.
Senator Halford?
I move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objection, committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs, is in third reading. Madam Secretary.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 69, State Affairs, an act relating to investments for Alaska Permit Fund and providing for effective date.
Discussion. Senator Strzelewski.
Yes, Mr. President, just very briefly on the bill. Another bill, Senate Bill 27, which is very similar with except some minor changes in the title, was heard by the Resources Committee and by Finance and is in rules. So the issue has been before the Senate. I think this is a bill that's been around. I hope it's an old friend. Just very briefly, the bill permits investments in non-domestic corporation debt securities, but it has to be of comparable quality to AA or better. I think it's really important to note that the investment responsibilities of the board, which are in 3713.120, calling for the prudent man rule, all of those things stay in effect. They're not being changed by this. The bill does set out, restate the percentages of various kinds of investments that can be made. But what it does in the category of equities is just to add the non-domestic to domestic, so it does not increase the percentage that would be used in this type of investment. And there's been some excellent testimony as the bill has gone forward showing that by allowing this, we're really allowing the fund to diversify, to lower its overall portfolio risk, and of course safety is the prime concern. I think there's going to be an added benefit for Alaska as we move into Pacific Rim and European markets. Certainly there's going to be more knowledge of Alaska and opportunities within this state. So I think there's just, this fits along with the global trend. Every indication is that the permanent Board of Trustees is going to move very slowly, very cautiously into this, but it does give them an extra tool, and I would urge my colleagues' support of this legislation.
Senator Eliason.
Mr. President, there's no question at all that the Permanent Fund has been made some very good investments. They've been very prudent, and I suspect that the bankers in Anchorage also thought that. But nevertheless, I have some concerns. I, for one, would like to see Alaska investing permanent fund in any of those countries who are participating in high seas interception of salmon. We have very few tools at our disposal to discourage that type of action. One, of course, is the Pelley Amendment, which is being addressed back in Congress, which would allow the president to boycott goods from certain countries that are participating in high seas interceptions. And I haven't had the opportunity to talk to the commission relative to whether or not they intend to make those investments, but this is one of the only tools we have. It's an economic tool, and I think that if, in fact, the Commission is going to make investments, I would hope that they would not make investments in those countries who are stealing our fish.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. Obviously, both the senators have addressed the situation that this bill has been around for the last couple of years. I think I'm glad it's finally coming to the floor and we're getting it out. I think it's a step in the right direction, considering that really investments now are in a global sense. Everything is being invested globally, all the way from Japan to the European currency and so on. And I think that I've gotten the assurances from the Permanent Fund Board and from the director that they're going to move very, very carefully in these other foreign areas. But we realize that it's a global economy right now and that we have to be investing in that. And I think the bottom line is that we're going to improve the dollars that are going to go back into the Permanent Fund, which means we're going to have an improvement in the amount of money that comes down to each individual throughout the state.
Further discussion? Senator Halford.
Thank you. I wonder, what is the maximum percentage now that the Permanent Fund could invest in foreign investments under the bill? And also, what is the situation with non-domestic currencies? I notice it's mentioned in the first page of the bill, and then it goes on and limits the investment in non-domestic currencies. I assume that is in some way to protect investment in stock that's traded in those currencies. But I wonder if we could have an explanation of that.
Senator Sturgeluski.
Yes, and we may need it at ease if I'm not able to satisfy the very legitimate questions. The way the bill is now set under current law, it allows for 50% in equities, and those would be domestic. This adds the non-domestic to that category. So they're all in the same. In other words, it doesn't increase the amount. But it does add the other category, so it would be the balance of those. And there is language in the bill that the intent of this is not to do going out and getting into this whole thing of investing in foreign currencies. And so the legislation does allow for hedging so that we're not going to be playing the currency market. Now, if that does not give you adequate information, I would ask for an at ease and see if we can specifically get it, or you'd like to go from that and define your question a little bit more.
Senator, we'll stand at ease. Back to order. Is there further discussion on committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs? Senator Halford.
Thank you, Mr. President. I assume, and I think the answer is confirmed, that this legislation would allow 50% of the total of the Permanent Fund investments to be in non-domestic corporations or currencies.
Senator Sturgeluski.
Yes, Mr. President. Again, currently the law calls for 50% in domestic equities, and we have added non-domestic in the same pool. The pool is the same, and true, it's 50%. But I disagree that we can just make a flat statement that it's possible to put 50% in non-domestic. I think it would be an incredible situation if the United States were such a totally poor market that we would not be investing in the United States. And that's basically saying I think you have to take into consideration all the legislation, certainly the rules of procedure of the Permanent Fund that talk about the prudent man rule. I'll tell you, if it would be 50% in foreign markets, I think we'd all better move to those countries and not stick around the United States. As a matter of fact, the Board of Trustees has been very conservative in the amount. They've come nowhere close to the total in their investment in equities. And I don't know what the figure is now, but I think it's somewhere around 12%, far under the allowable 50%. So I think it would be extraordinary circumstances that our markets would be so poor that we would be moving to other countries.
Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just again, a response on this. I know we looked at it very, very carefully. There's that 50% provision, as the senator from Midtown mentioned, and that 50%
is what's been in effect pretty much the last 4 or 5 years. Are we...
Senator, I'm listening.
Okay. I've got all this discussion going. So 50% is essentially what we've been working with the last 4 or 5 years. They've been very, very conservative in how they've approached it. I think right now, in equities, you know, in the Standard & Poor's, the 500 or 600 stocks that they invest in, which they've done extremely well in, they're at about 12% of the total portfolio, and that moves up and down depending on how the market conditions change. What this would allow, and if you go to the second page, you can see all the different kinds of securities they get involved in here, which are in law, on the second page on line 6 through 11. Non-domestic governments, non-domestic government agencies, domestic corporate stocks. There'd still be, I'm sure, a significant amount of money in domestic corporate stocks. In fact, I think they would probably look at it very conservatively and probably have the balance in domestic stocks like they do now. And they have about 500 or 600 companies that are all American companies that they invest in. What they'd be doing here is just adding to that total portfolio. They'd be able to do an index. Much of the Pacific Rim Index has done extremely well over and above the Standard & Poor's Index. So it just gives them more flexibility, but I still think the key is that their performance has been so good, and on the conservative side, that this would work. Under the provisions of the bill prior to this, it was as high as 70% to be allowed in equity. So actually, this caps it at 50%.
Senator Jones.
President, about a year ago, I think it was, we had a hearing, a presentation by the Permanent Fund Management to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and they pointed out that there was quite an advantage to investing in foreign or non-domestic corporate stocks, but there wasn't too much advantage in investing in securities, term deposits, certificates of deposit in the non-domestic markets. I was wondering if we could have an explanation. Is anyone here, or maybe the Finance Committee heard it in the presentation or support for this in their hearings? What is the advantage today of investing in non-domestic stocks, and what is the advantage in investing in securities of non-domestic governments and non-domestic government agencies? I'm a little apprehensive about investing in governments.
Will the Senate please stand at ease? Come back to order. We have in front of us committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs. Is there any further discussion?
Question.
Question has been called for. The question in front of the body is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs, pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Have all senators voted? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs, has passed the body by a vote of 16 yeas and 2 nays. Senator Elias.
Mr. President, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 69, House Bill 69.
Reconsideration is given on committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs. Senator Halford.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call and final passage of committee substitute for House Bill 69, State Affairs, be considered the roll call and the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. Senator Halford, I need a motion to move back to messages from the House.
I move and ask unanimous consent that we revert to messages from the other House.
Without objection, revert to messages from the other House.
Message of March 1st, dear Mr. President, the House has passed and transmitted for consideration House Joint Resolution Number 21, disapproving a local boundary commission recommendation for an annexation of territory to Fairbanks North Star Borough.
Finance Committee. Brings us to the
citation calendar. Madam Secretary.
Citation honoring Leo Rhode, 50 years of public service, by Senators Fisher, Figgs, Halford, Rhody, Binkley, Sturzelewski, Eliason, Sharoff, and Kelly, honoring Manuscripts of Sitna Borough, 25th anniversary, by Senators Zemanski, Figgs, Halford, Binkley, Sturzelewski, and Katula, honoring Erin Campbell, 1989 Artist of the Year, by Senators Zemanski, Katula, Figgs, Binkley,
Duncan.
I'd move and ask unanimous consent to have issued as a co-sponsor on the citation honoring Leo Road.
Not objection. Senator Coghill?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a co-sponsor of the citation honoring Leo Road, and also, Mr. President, the honoring the Absolute Christian School Boy Basketball AAA team.
Not objection. Senator Eliason?
I move and ask unanimous consent that my name be added to the citations honoring the basketball teams.
Not objection. Senator Ulick?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move and ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a co-sponsor on the citation on Leo Road, honoring the Matsu Borough, and on the Abbott Christian School Boys Basketball Team.
That Senator Jones?
I ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a, my name is shown on the citation honoring Homer High School Boys Basketball Team.
Without objection. Senator Fahrenkamp?
Mr. President, I would request that my name be added to the Leo Road citation and the Mount Nusa set the borough citation.
Without objection. Senator Alford?
I ask unanimous consent I be shown on the Irwin Campbell citation.
Without objection.
I move and ask unanimous consent the citations appearing on today's calendar be adopted by the Senate.
Without objection, the citation calendar is adopted. There are two reconsiderations. Senator Figgs.
I'd like to bring up my reconsideration on Senate Joint Resolution number 8 at this time.
Madam Secretary.
Senate Joint Resolution number 8, urging a change of the Internal Revenue Code and the tax treatment of the transfer of real property subject to a mortgage that is a recourse loan of indebtedness on the property is discharged through foreclosure, repossession, or under surrender of the property before the Senate on reconsideration.
Senator Figgs.
Ask unanimous consent that Senate Joint Resolution number 8 be returned to second reading for the purposes of amendment number 1 that's been on everybody's desk.
Without objection, Senate Joint Resolution number 8 is returned to second reading. Senator Figgs. Oh, Madam Secretary.
Amendment number 1. Senate Joint Resolution number 8, page 2, line 2, after homeowners, this has been distributed.
Senator Figgs.
I would move amendment number 1 for Senate Joint Resolution number 8.
Are there any objections?
Well, I didn't ask unanimous consent. I thought maybe an explanation would be in order.
Senator Figgs.
Okay. We called I had Jack Chenoweth, the legal staff who drafted the resolution, call the IRS, and the IRS agent that he talked to, or the person that dealt with this bill and understood this bill, felt that these amendments would put in commercial property in the appropriate place with using the appropriate language and would include both residential and commercial property owners who were in the same class on losses when they had a foreclosure, sir. And with that, I would ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the bill. Okay.
There is an objection. Senator Ulick.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to speak to the objection, and then maybe it can be cleared up, and then I can remove my objection. I guess my only concern is I don't know how the IRS treats like profits as far as corporations or in regard to commercial enterprises, and I just wanted maybe an explanation of what the difference was, because I know there was a concern about people losing their equity in their homes versus someone that's in it for a profit as far as corporations. Are we making that distinction here and that difference in this particular bill, or would this also apply to commercial properties too?
Senator Hofford.
The distinction that's made by the IRS is personal residence or property held for personal use. In the case of that property, you can't deduct your losses. In the case of commercial property, you can deduct losses. So if you have your million-dollar building and you owe $1 million, they accept it back when it's only worth $800,000 and discharge $200,000 in debt. That debt, although it would become taxable if that were a residence, it is directly offset by the loss. You can't deduct the loss on your residence. That's the reason for the original drafting of the resolution. The effect of the amendments does include commercial property, and there is a reason to do that. If you include commercial property in the way it's drafted, you allow someone who essentially has an involuntary conversion, has a low basis because they took accelerated depreciation to recover that portion. They don't work exactly the same, but the resolution does make sense for both commercial and residential property. The residential property is specifically in trouble because there is an exemption in the law that doesn't allow you to deduct your losses. In the case of commercial property, you can deduct your losses, but many people have a very low base in commercial property because of accelerated depreciation before the involuntary conversion.
The The objection maintained. Are there any further objections to the adoption of Amendment Number 1? Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Senator Halford, we automatically amend. Is there any discussion on Senate Joint Resolution Number 8 amended? Members may proceed to vote. Question being so, Senate Joint Resolution Number 8 passed the body. Any senators fail to vote, Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote. And so Senate Joint Resolution Number 8 amended has passed the body by a vote of 17 yeas and no nays. I have a bit of a question as to whether Senate Bill 82 was going to be brought up today. Fair enough. Unfinished business. Announcements. Senator Eliason.
Mr. President, maybe we return to unfinished business.
Without objection, return to unfinished business.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that if I be excused from the Senate, not subject to the call on Friday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day.
Without objection. Senator Adams.
I yield to my colleague.
Senator Eliason.
Old business.
Senator Adams.
Yes, under unfinished business, Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be a co-sponsor on Senate Bill 145, an act making a special appropriation to the Department of Administration for the payment of a grant to the Alaska Native Cultural Center Corporation and providing for the clarification.
Without objection, so shown. Senator Ewling.
Thank you, Mr. President. Same motion, please.
Without objection, so shown. Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution 21, disapproving Fairbanks North Star Borough annexation, be waived from Finance Committee. Next committee of referral is rules. We've already heard the same resolution in finance under the title SJR 19.
Without objection, that resolution is waived from the Finance Committee. Senator Porchell.
Thank you, Mr. President. Although I do plan on being here in the event of inclement weather, I would ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call of the House on Monday, March 6th.
Without objection. Announcements. Senator Fahrenkamp.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today at 1:30, the Resources Committee will be receiving a briefing on the high sea salmon interception by Larry Carter of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, Rick Glauber, International North Pacific Fisheries Commission, and Steve Engel, the National Marine Fisheries Service. That'll be in joint with the Senate Special Committee on High Sea Salmon Interception, 1:30 in the budget.
Further announcement, Senator Fisher.
Committee will be taking up Senate Bill 171, which involved the length of the school term, SB 183, an appropriation for school construction account, SJR 23, the labeling of irradiated foods, and SB 134, acupuncture.
Senator Binkley?
Do we have a brief at ease?
Senator stand at ease.
Thank you.
Senator Adams?
Are there announcements, Mr. President?
Announcements?
Yes, tomorrow's Community and Regional Affairs, two bills will be taken off our calendar with concurrence of the sponsors. Senate Bill Number 11, Compensation for Local Boundary Commission Members. Senate Bill Number 15, an act relating to public schools employees' collective bargaining agreements and providing for an effective date. That has been changed over the next Tuesday. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Porchell.
Thank you, Mr. President. In State Affairs today, we will be taking up SJR 30, dealing with the Job Corps Center in the Matsu Valley, and SB 73 dealing with retirement incentive program for PERS and TERS. I'd like to make note, Mr. President, that on Friday, State Affairs will be meeting at 2 p.m. to accommodate a couple of our members who are meeting on the Oil and Gas Special Committee. Also, I'd like to announce a scheduling change. We had scheduled SB 5 longevity bonus annuity approach on Monday, March 6th. That will be moved to Wednesday, March 8th.
Senator Lyson.
Commerce will meet this afternoon in the Belts Room at 3:30. We'll be taking up Senate Bill 56, an act relating to the state employment preference for service in the National Guard. Senate Bill 58, an act relating to the definition of Alaska bidder for purposes of Alaska bidder preferences in the awarding of state contracts. And Senate Bill 61, an act prohibiting certain employees of the Department of Fish and Game from having certain financial interests at 3:30 in the Belts Room.
And under announcements, we're going to recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon. There will be a majority caucus 15 minutes following the recess. Further announcements? Special orders. Senator Halford.
Move and ask unanimous consent the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Senate stands in recess.
Senator Coghill, would you give me a motion to revert to messages from the House, please?
Mr. President, I move that we return to the calendar for receiving messages from the House.
Objections? Madam Secretary.
Message of March 1st. Mr. President, the House respectfully invites the Senate to meet in joint session in the House chamber on March 2nd at 11 a.m. for the purpose of an address by the Honorable Warren W. Matthews, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
We will accept that. Senator Strzelecki, would you give me a motion, please, to accept the House's invitation to meet tomorrow at 11 a.m. for the purpose of an address by the Honorable Warren Matthews?
Yes, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we meet tomorrow, reply to the House, meet with the Honorable Justice Matthews in joint session at 11 o'clock tomorrow.
Without objection, we've accepted the House's invitation. Now, as I understand it, all we have left to do is adjourn. Did you have an announcement of the Rules Committee meeting, Senator?
Mr. President, I will give an announcement of the Rules Committee. We'll be posting the agenda at 10:45 tomorrow.
Okay, now
make that 10:30 tomorrow.
We should probably meet early if we're going to go in at 11, so you've made the announcement of the Rules meeting. We should probably adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Wait.
Senator Strzelecki.
Mr. President, I would give notice of a Rules Committee meeting at 9:30 tomorrow, and with the item under consideration to be posted.
Anything else come before the Senate? Senator Halford.
I move and ask unanimous consent the Senate stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow.
Senate stands adjourned. John, you want to call all the Senate?